Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 797. Katie Levine, who is on the Nerdist Community Corkboard.
We got a couple really cool things here today. Sean Patton, who is one of my favorite comedians and one of my favorite people in the whole world, is doing a Great Lakes tour with his girlfriend, Caitlin Cook, who is also just so fucking awesome. And she does musical comedy. And it's going on right now, but they were just in Grand Rapids. Then they're going to Cincinnati, Dayton, Columbus, Cleveland. If you follow Sean on Twitter, it's at Mr. Sean Patton to find out more info.
That's Scene, S-E-A-N.
Yes, he
it's the
it
Scene
like
Sean.
Yep. And then also, the organization that helped Save Scout when she lived on the streets, it's this organization called Downtown Dog Rescue. And they're really great. They work in L.A. and they have something called the Shelter Intervention Program, where they work at the South L.A. shelter and they help keep dogs out of the shelter. So people come in and they're like, my dog has some health issue and they can't afford to pay for it. So they think the best thing to do is surrender their dog. That's the most humane thing to do because they don't know what else to do. So these people help keep those dogs out of the shelter. They help homeless people take care of their dogs, which was the case for Scout. And so they are having a big fundraiser for it right now. So if you go to gofundme.com/SIP3rd anniversary, or just downtowndogrescue.org, you know, you can donate and help them out because they do a lot of good in LA.
That is very nice, Katie Levine. Thank you so much for the Nerdist Community Corkboard. You can submit to events@nerdist.com. If you want to submit your corkboard event, please do share it with us. We try to get through as many as we can. This episode is Sam Rockwell, who is fucking rad.
He's been on my wish list for this podcast since the very beginning.
He was great.
Oh, he was everything I thought he would be.
Our friend Allie Gertz, who works on At Midnight, who's a great comedian and a songwriter, she had a Sam Rockwell-themed party.
Really?
And so she's a big fan of Sam, so I was like, hey, you should come sit. And so she was there. She didn't
actually talk
on the podcast, but she just sat and watched, and they took a picture afterwards, and he was really nice. Yeah, Sam was really great. He's exactly what you hope. He was like, oh, he's just a good hangout
guy. He's just so cool.
Yeah, so
cool.
He's promoting Mr. Right. It's in theaters this Friday, April 8th. You will want to hang out with Sam Rockwell after this podcast. Mm-hmm. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 797 with Mr. Sam Rockwell. Katie, fire the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Weird cold podcast dungeon.
Yeah, cool, man. Cool.
It's all bricky.
I like it.
We're moving to a fancier space right now.
This is great. This is the deal, man.
This feels like a lot of really bad Hollywood things happened here over the last 100 years. A lot of gross things probably happened.
Yeah.
In this room.
Yeah, like Desi and Lucy.
That's our At Midnight stage is the original I Love Lucy
that's
stage.
What they said, yeah, right.
So cool. I think my dressing room might have been hers. So I don't, you know, I listen sometimes late at night when we're there working late. I'm listening for the whispers of.
Oh, that's me.
That's you. That's you, Allie Gertz. How you doing, man?
Good, man.
Very
good
to see you officially.
Nice to see you. Thanks for having me.
Oh my God, I'm so happy to have you on.
No, it's great, man. I'm here to. This is my dad. Was sorry, I'll turn this off.
No, that's all right. It is your dad. You got to answer
my
your dad.
My dad. Yeah, he's good. Okay.
He's good. Everything's fine.
I think he's okay.
Do you ever get that?
We'll see.
We'll see if he's all right.
We'll see.
Well, that's that weird, you know, I don't know what it is, but I get, you sort of get that thing when, do you talk to your dad a lot?
I talk to my dad, I'd say probably once a week, once every 2 weeks.
Yeah. Like just there's that weird thing every once in a while when like when an elder relative calls, it's like a parent, you're like, is everything okay? Like you always just immediately go, okay, what? Is everything
cool?
Oh, good. Oh, good. All right.
Then you can breathe.
Fine. Oh, go. You're mad at a commercial. All right, good. Well, that's fine. We can deal with that. We can totally deal
Walmart,
with that.
Yeah.
How you been? What's going on? You know, I've been a fan.
Good.
We've never met, but.
Hey, man. Well,
it sucks that we've never met, but I've been such a fan of yours for so many years.
Dude, thank you so much. Thanks a lot. I'm so happy to be on the show. I'm excited to talk about stuff.
What do you want to talk about? This is your time. I'm like a therapist.
Whatever you want to talk about. I could use some therapy.
All right, good. Sam, when was the last time you felt whole?
It's been a while.
You grew up in San Francisco, is that correct?
I grew up in San Francisco and New York, a little bit of both, yeah.
Did you go back and forth when you were a kid? Was that how it worked?
I did. My parents separated when I was five, so I would go visit my mother in the summer, and then I'd go back to San Francisco, go to school, and then in the summer I'd go, and that's how kind of I got into acting and stuff.
Was your background mainly theater, or was there any comedy stuff?
There was improvisational training, so to speak, because my mother was in an improv troupe called Joan Crawford's Children.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was fun. So I got a little bit of improv training as a kid. But then I went to like a high school performing arts, but it was sort of like the San Francisco version, kind of low budget version.
Right.
It was really 500 of the students and about the whole school was about 2,000 and 500 of them were performing arts. And Aisha Tyler.
Oh, you know Aisha.
And Margaret Cho was in it, and we were all in class together.
That's fantastic. Yeah. San Francisco. Because San Francisco has an amazing comedy scene.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And it sounds like your mom might have been there, like, right in the Robin Williams years.
My mom went to state there, and that's how she met my father, and then she moved to New York, and she got into improv in New York, but there was that whole scene, the other cafe and all that stuff. And Margaret, Aisha, and I were in an improv group called Batwing Lubricant.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So that was pretty, in high school.
Were you guys performing around the city or just mainly in school?
We were performing, like the other cafe was as fancy as it got for us. I think mostly high school. I think that was really nerve-wracking. I remember that was like the big time. That was like Carnegie Hall for us, you know. But yeah, and there was a girl named Jerry Lawler, and she was amazing. And there was a bunch of great people, you know. Yeah, but Margaret and Aisha, went on to do fun stuff.
Because that was all, I'm guessing that was probably late 80s, maybe?
Yeah, it was like 87 I graduated. So that's a while ago.
That's kind of when that whole, that whole sort of alternative comedy movement, for lack of a better word, started springing up around San Francisco.
Are you a stand-up?
Yeah.
That's great. That's cool.
Yeah. And
where did you were in L.A.?
Yeah, I was in L.A., which was really the worst. And I started in L.A., the first time I started dicking around with it was early 90s.
Yeah.
And then I didn't do it full time until 98. But in the early 90s, there was this transplant group from San Francisco of like the Patton Oswalt and Margaret and Blaine Capatch and David Cross and Odenkirk and all these people came down.
Yeah.
And kind of infiltrated and really kind of helped launch the L.A. alternative comedy scene, which was the worst place to learn comedy for everyone else. Because it's so like everything's so inside and it's anti-comedy and there weren't real jokes. It was just like it was great, but it was not. You can't go to like Minnesota and pull that shit off. So
yeah,
it was,
sure,
it was
sure,
not
sure.
A great place to learn, but I loved being in it.
Bill Hicks was still around back then, right? He was. I just got somebody sent me a thing about he did a bit on Cops a long time ago. I don't know if you remember that bit.
If I saw it, I might remember it.
Yeah, it was really funny.
He was really the one of the godfathers of that kind of voice. And when you see the shit he was doing in the 80s when everyone else was doing like, hey, men and women, we're so different, and Bill Hicks was basically telling audiences that they were stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
And doing this really – I mean, he was incredible. Did you ever see him live?
I never did. I'd love to have seen him or Kinison, but yeah, I guess that was. But you were part. Did you see Bill Burr and some of those guys?
Well, Burr was more of a Boston comic,
yeah.
Which was a whole separate sect of comedians, the Giraldos and the Burrs of the world, and Boston kind of bred. LA, San Francisco bred this more kind of like laid back, I don't give a fuck, I don't even have to tell jokes. And Boston was more of a, I want to punch you in the face with tags until you submit to this comedy. I love the Boston comics.
Yeah. Who else? Bill Burr, and he's got that friend of his, or Louis's got that friend of his, who's I think a Boston guy too.
Todd Barry?
Is that the guy? Yeah, I think so. He's on that show. Louis's got that new show, right?
Galifianakis. You thinking, is that Galifianakis?
Not Galifianakis, although I love... Baskets. I'm a huge Baskets fan.
I haven't seen Baskets yet, and I hear it's amazing. And I hear Louis Anderson is incredible in it.
It's great. It's fantastic. Louis, who plays the mother.
Yes.
Oh, God, he's great. But, I'm a huge Baskets fan. I love Zach Galifianakis. I think he's amazing.
Have you guys worked together on anything?
No. Well, we did G-Force together. I mean, we didn't do it together. But we went to the. I remember seeing him at the premiere. I was a voice for G-Force. He was in it with Will Arnett. Yeah,
that's a fucking hell of a cast. I think Galaxy Quest still, and I'm sure people must still bug you about it.
Oh, hey, yeah,
it holds up as. Still one of the best comedies of all time.
Thanks, man. I think it's. Thanks for saying that. I mean, you know, you're not alone. A lot of people love that movie.
It's a great movie.
You know, and they were going to do a sequel on Amazon, and we were ready to sign up for it. And you know, Alan Rickman passed away,
right.
and then Tim Allen wasn't available. He has a show, and everybody's schedule was all weird. We were going to do this like sequel on Amazon. It was going to shoot. Like right now.
Holy shit.
Yeah, we were ready.
Come on, Tim Allen.
I know, right?
Don't get comfortable because you're on a sitcom. That schedule is like 4 days a week, 10 to 4.
Yeah, totally. And how do you fill that void, you know, of Alan Rickman? I mean, that's a hard void to fill.
I think that would be the most difficult thing to get around because he really was. I mean, everyone really brought something amazing to that cast, and even even Justin, who was fucking
Justin
incredible.
Long, yeah, he was great.
I mean,
he's a good buddy of mine, yeah.
But getting around the Rickman thing, I think would be a. But I still think, you know, that movie was really important too because Tim Allen had that really broke him out of the I'm the tool time guy,
yeah,
and put him in like actually this is a really cool thing that he's in.
Yeah, well, he did that Santa Claus movie and that showed that he had kind of Michael Keaton, Bill Murray chops, and
yeah,
and you know, and then yeah, Galaxy Quest was great for him. I think it'd be fun.
How much was Fleegman improvised?
Fleegman was a little bit improvised, but you know. Everybody, I mean, Tony Shalhoub and Missy Pyle and all these people.
Rainn Wilson was also in there.
Rainn Wilson. I mean, everybody. We had so many. Patrick Breen and it was a great cast. Enrico he came up with that whole language for the aliens, the way that they talked, and everybody just followed suit. But yeah, we did some improv. I mean, it was such an eclectic cast. Daryl and Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
It was something, man. It was really something. It was
Could
fun.
You tell when you were shooting it? Like, I think this is extra funny. This might be really good.
I was turning my nose up at it for a second. I was turning it down. I turned it down. I auditioned for it.
How could you?
No, it's really stupid. I'd done the Green Mile, and I was like, I want to be a serious actor. You know, I'd be like Sean Penn or something. And then... I auditioned for it. Somebody just talked me into going in, and I read. And I think Paul Rudd, I think a bunch of people read. And then I don't think I got it. And then it came back to me, but I was already signed up to do a lead in an independent film opposite Marissa Tomei. And I really wanted to do this movie, you know, and it was a lead. And it was – so then when it came, and I was like being really weird about it, and then – somebody knocked sense into me, and I talked to Dean Pariseau, and I was like, I guess I was afraid to play like, because he's essentially an idiot, you know?
Right.
And so I was afraid to do that kind of tomfoolery, but then I knew Green Mile was coming out around the same time, and that would be a nice contrast, so I went up and just decided to do it. I think I was inspired by Michael Keaton and Night Shift.
Oh, one of the best. That's,
I think then I realized, oh yeah, okay, this has got, you know, this has got traction. This has got stamina. I mean, this has got, you know, cachet.
Yeah.
This kind of comedic lineage of this archetype is a good thing, you know.
That's another one of the Galaxy. I have a rotation of comedies that I have to watch every once in a while, like Groundhog Day, Galaxy Quest, Night Shift is definitely in there for anyone. Because not all, sometimes, you know, when you're growing up and you're in that certain age range and you think back and you go, oh, this one movie was like the greatest. And you watch and you're like, what happened? Like, you know, they don't always hold up. But, you know, Night Shift is fucking
great. Night Shift is amazing, you know. And you know, it's those performances. I mean, you know, Bill Murray and, you know, Richard Pryor and Bustin' Loose and Walter Matthau and Bad News Bears. And
Bad News Bears would never get made that way today.
No, it would never get made. But you know, I mean, the kids, you know, drinking and cussing and being racist. I mean, it's just you would never be able to do that, you know?
Never.
I mean, they barely got away. I don't know how they got away with Bad Santa, but I guess they did. They had kids, but it was rated R. But, yeah. You know, comedic performances are just as worthy, obviously, as dramatic performances. And I think it's just, it's really a matter of perception, you know, because you and I know that, you know, the comedic performances, Bill Murray is in, you know, Meatballs or Stripes is just as valid as, you know, I think De Niro in The Deer Hunter or whatever. You know,
I think it's harder to make people laugh. I just think it's harder.
I think it's tough. And I guess, you know, I was trained Meisner, and then I've had some improv background. I've never done stand up or anything, but, I maintain that it's just as hard, if not harder, like you said.
I do think it's interesting that sometimes when someone clearly has a gift in one area, like comedy, but then they, like, kind of like you said, where you're like, I wanted to be a serious actor guy. Like, what do you think that is?
Which part of it?
You kind of didn't know that you could do it, but you're like, no, I want to be serious. Like, what was compelling about that for you?
I guess, you know, when I started out and I got out of high school, I didn't really take acting seriously, and I was doing commercials, and I booked a couple of movies, and I was like 19. I got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I did Last Exit to Brooklyn, all these. And then I went to school with William Esper, and he kind of beat some sense into me and was like, you know, why don't you come to school and, you know, I did the summer program. He's like, why don't you come do the 2-year program? And I said, yeah, you know, I'm working. I got a Colgate commercial, you know, he's like, or whatever, you know, like, you know, whatever the fuck it was. It was like, you know, I got an American Express commercial running. It's national, dude. I got a Ford Tractor commercial. Which, by the way, are very lucrative.
They're amazing.
You know, between restaurant jobs, it's pretty good to get
those. It's not bad. If it runs for like a year, that's just a paycheck that just keeps rolling
Totally. But he was like, come on, just come and train and, you know, it's going to, you know, go by like that, you know, in the blink of an eye. And then that's where I met my acting coach and William Esper and a woman named Maggie Flanagan, my acting coach, Terry Knickerbocker. And that's where I kind of like, I realized, oh, this is a real, although my parents were actors, I think I took it for granted. It was a real art form. And I realized that, you know, it's like Jedi training, you know, and you got to like take it seriously, and you can't just, you know, it's just like being, you know, a Groundlings or a Second City member. It's Jedi training, you know, and that's not something to be taken lightly. You know, I mean, Kristen Wiig or Will Ferrell, I mean, they were trained to do that. You know, so I think that's important to know. And Duvall and Dustin Hoffman did Meisner and stuff. So so I guess when I kind of, you know, came out of William Esper and I was just, you know, thinking I want to be an actor and I was an actor, but then, you know, you forget. I mean, you know, Sean Penn was also in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You know,
he was amazing in it.
I mean, that's an incredible performance. You can't, you know, like,
he was also in We're No Angels, though.
There you go.
Forget that.
So was De Niro and James Russo. Yeah,
we have all the exact same reference points.
You know, listen, it's just I think it's really, it's not so much. I think obviously comedy is a great art form. I think it's just I don't know. I think it's just harder. People's perception of to go back and forth can be hard, or it used to be. Maybe not as much anymore, you know?
Yeah, I feel like people's brains can accept the fact that someone can be many things. And it's not like, you're just a clown.
Yeah.
Or you just make people cry. You're very intense. Like, it feels
How do you think that's changed through Robin Williams? And
I think it's changed because of people like Robin Williams, and I think it's also changed because I think it's just a media distribution. There's so many ways that people get media now, and so many different things crossing over, that I think people's brains just go, because you never used to be able to be a TV person and do a movie or vice versa. Everyone was very compartmentalized, and now it's just everyone just does everything.
Everyone just does everything.
Yeah.
Sarah Silverman just did that movie. I heard that was great, and you know, Richard Pryor was he had great traumatic performances. So yeah, you know, Bill Murray.
Oh man,
you know.
Bill Murray's the one, you know, he's one of those guys that I have that phone number where you can call and leave a message and ask him to do stuff.
Yeah.
I always wanted.
You have that number?
I have it.
That's awesome.
And I've been I've had it for like a year, and I've never called it because I want him to come on the podcast. And
yeah.
And I just feel like the best way to do that would just be call and go, hey, do you want – and I've not yet come up
we should just call him together and say, hey, fucker, you owe me $30.
Does he owe you $30?
Why don't you show up to these studios? I don't know, just make it up.
You know. He might think he owes you
$30. Remember that time we got drunk and – you know, come on, let's – you owe me $30.
Shit, I think I owe Sam Rockwell $30. Like he might actually trick him.
Maybe he might show up just to pay me back.
That would be
or
fucking –
or say we owe him money. Maybe that's a better way.
Now, you owe us $30, but we owe you $100. So if you want to get that $70 net, this is the best way to conduct that. You give us the $30. You can't send it because you have to give us the $30.
You have to come in person.
Yeah. As long as we're as confident as we can be about the rule structure, he might buy into it as a thing.
You tell him it was that OTB thing.
Sorry, man. You know, you got to do it. You got to do it. Yeah, I've never.
Which they don't even have anymore.
I haven't really worked up the right way to say who I am, why I'm calling, why he's not going to get murdered, and, you know, that it'll be okay. Like, I don't know how to convey all that in a minute to where I'm not leaving that message that Favreau leaves on Swingers with that. Oh, I got to call back.
Oh, yeah, totally. That would be the message, too. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. You know, I got cut off, but I forgot to give you my number.
What I meant was, No, totally.
Then it's over.
Well, is it Mitch Glazer's the guy who he's his writer? You know Mitch Glazer?
I don't think I know Mitch.
Mitch is his writer. He was on when we did Charlie's Angels. Mitch was his guy and wrote for him, and they're best friends. And so sometimes they would try to get to Bill Murray through Mitch. And I got to meet him. In fact, oh God, I was doing a scene where I got to shoot Drew Barrymore, and I was twirling the gun. I was being all cool and, you know, being like a cowboy. And all of a sudden, Bill Murray came in, and I started dropping the gun, and I was a complete asshole. You know, I was just like, I got really nervous, and then I met him, and he was cool. And then his Mitch Glazer rewrote some of the scenes, and because you know that thing had 17 writers,
right?
And only one of them was a woman, and it's a movie about three women.
Three women, right? Of course,
but you know,
it's probably one more than the original Charlie's Angels had.
Yeah, probably. yeah, exactly. But so Mitch kind of saved our ass. He saved my ass because I had a lot of bad exposition, and then finally he came in and kind of made it funny, and I could say funny shit.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, because I mean, this is just all hearsay, but from what I've read on the internet, Bill, it seemed like that was not his dream job once he got on set.
No, but he was willing to play, and in fact, we had a scene together that was cut, but he left a voicemail that I wish I could have saved, and it was on the hotel, about the scene and about how we need to rewrite the scene. And it was one of those voicemails you just want to save, you know. And, of course, I couldn't save it, but I listened to it, like, you know, a million times.
Do you have people that you think of as, like, oh, that's kind of the ideal career to have? Like, are there sort of mentors that don't necessarily know their mentors?
You know, I have – a lot of – I have kind of an eclectic, as I'm sure you do, idols, you know. I mean, everywhere from Muhammad Ali to, like, you know, Robert De Niro and Gene Hackman and Chris Walken. And
you're wearing a Christopher Walken shirt
now.
I am,
and I know Chris, and I've worked with him. And
so have you worn that shirt in front of him?
I have, actually. Yeah, actually, Colin Farrell and I wore it at the premiere of Seven Psychopaths just to fuck with him. And I think he loved it. We were making a real statement, yeah. Well, we worship Chris, and we were, you know, we love Chris, so we were.
He understand it? Does he understand, like,
yeah,
the kind of, like, Walken worship, or does he just think, what is this? This is all crazy. Like, does he understand it?
You know, that's a good question. I think he does. You know, he's very lucid. He's not as weird as people, I think he is. I think that's a way to disarm or rather keep people away. I think he's very normal, and he's very, very quick. He sees everything, you know, so I'm sure he's aware, but I think he doesn't, you know, he doesn't necessarily want to talk about acting, you know, he just wants to just be whatever, just, you know, look at stupid pictures or, you know, that Colin and I would show him on the internet, you know, like horrible things.
That's amazing that you guys just got together and fucked around on the internet with Christopher Walken.
We were in the desert with him killing time, you know, with hot chocolate. So we were like, you know, we'd fuck around with him, and he's just like a kid, you know. He likes to laugh. He's great.
What do you do when you? I imagine at this point you're probably able to kind of mash the fandom down because you've got some experience.
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes it is a weird thing. I mean, Walken's definitely the closest I've ever, or the most time I've ever spent with somebody like that. You know, I've worked with Gene Hackman and De Niro, and I've done readings with Pacino, but I've never spent as much time with an icon like that, like as much as Chris. And Chris and I have spent a lot of time together, and that is a weird thing. You got to sort of compartmentalize your hero worship, and then you're just like two dudes. It is very strange. I'm sure you've experienced that. It's like,
I have experienced it many times, and I'm usually good at pushing it down, and I can feel the adrenaline kind of rising. Like I can feel it rising, like I'm a thermometer in a pledge drive.
Yeah.
And I just feel the red coming up to the goal. And
totally. Totally what it's like.
And I have to try to, I did teach myself a trick.
Yeah.
And the trick was, when you get all stressed out, it's because you're overwhelmed, I think, by the infinite possibilities of what could happen, what could go wrong, what am I going to, I don't want to fuck this up. This is just one perfect moment. And so I do this thing where, and I guess some might call this mindfulness, but I'm not really, I don't know much about meditation, but I stop and I start I smell whatever's in the air. I acknowledge what that is. I look at things and I go, okay, well,
that's good.
Basically force myself to be present to try to scoop that out of the way. And sometimes it works.
That's really hard.
It's very hard when...
It's a very hard thing to do, yeah.
You know, you're standing right next to, you know, Tom Hanks or someone. But some of those...
You interviewed Tom Hanks.
Yeah, a couple times.
He's very cool.
He's rad because he acknowledges in a non-arrogant way that he is Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
It's all going to be okay. He wants you to feel comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
He's very, like when we went, the first time I went there, he was like, do you want something to drink? Can I get you a drink? Like he wasn't, there was no.
He's so cool,
He was so cool.
He's so cool. Him and like George Clooney should teach a class on how to be a movie star. Like, and Drew Barrymore. They should teach that class. You know, like they make you feel so comfortable.
Yeah.
You know,
and other people, you know, I think just sort of
they like don't
the
make
shields
feel,
go the,
yeah,
shield,
yeah.
the shields go up and
yeah.
it's more like, oh, you're very aware of who you are and
totally
just get near that and you
yeah
know.
Yeah yeah
yeah. Clooney, I've met him a couple of times and he's just a guy. He's just a guy.
He's very good at
Keaton was that way too.
Was he?
Yes.
Oh, that's nice to hear. I'd love to meet him. He's
oh
so
my
cool.
god, you guys, you,
he's
course,
awesome.
There's no reason. There's no way
he's
you're not going to work together at some point.
Such a badass. Yeah.
There's no way. The freaky thing about guys like that, or even the first time I got to meet Pee-wee Herman, Paul.
That's awesome.
Was that you're just having a conversation, then all of a sudden they'll do something or say something that you click into as a mannerism from an iconic thing that they've done.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're, like, with Michael Keaton, it was a... he was talking about something. He was just like, like he did that side glance that he does. And I'm like, you know.
That's awesome.
And with Paul, it was, he just did a thing. And then everyone in the room just,
that's great. That's
locked
great.
Up.
That's awesome.
How do you get past it?
I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. I think I for years I couldn't get past it. I got very nervous around people, and I was very, you know, I think it took years, and then finally I was just like, all right, fuck it. I mean, I might not watch somebody's movies, you know, right before working with them, but everybody's eventually so cool, you know. And at the end of the day, we're all just, you know, we're all neurotic and we're all trying to be good, you know. We all think we suck and we're trying to, you know what I mean? So it's like everybody's like that. That's the thing you realize is that everybody's just like, hey, am I any good? Do I suck? You know, it's like everybody has that quality.
I always find that so fascinating about this particular business. And it's like the very thing that makes people good performers is also the thing that makes it difficult for them to just not flip out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a fear of sucking and a little competitive ambition is okay, but like a fear of, like, you know, just wanting to be good, I think. But Tom Hanks is one of the greats, man. He's just fucking so cool. We were doing the Green Mile. He was doing. They let him off early to go put his hands in the cement on Hollywood Boulevard, and then he could have left and went home. He came back and did off camera for people. It was just
what a fucking showboat.
What a showboat!
God damn.
What does he think he is?
Okay, yes.
What are you, a saint?
You make the rest of us look bad?
Yeah, man.
Fucking dare
you. Listen, go home and have a beer, dude. Who do you think you are? No. We're on to you,
no,
pal.
He could not be
he's
sweeter,
the best.
More. I mean, he's. And
how about him and Captain Phillips? I don't think he actually even got a nomination for that.
I don't know if he did or not. I don't think he did. Yeah, that was the last time we talked to him.
He was incredible in that.
He was great.
He was fucking robbed. He was amazing in that.
He's great, and he has the ability to do something which I think is very, very hard to do, which is just to play a guy. I mean, like, if there's a hook, you can get rep. But if it's just like, all right, you're a dude, you're a captain, you gotta be this guy. And he can just play a guy.
I know. That's great. It's a great quality. It's like you're right. It's like who else? Craig T. Nelson has that quality, but it's like, you're right. And Keaton has it too, but it's like, you are that guy.
But you have that too, though.
I feel I can do that, maybe.
You do have that. Just like, you can just like an Iron Man 2. Yeah. Like,
that guy's a dicky guy.
He was a dicky guy, but he's still a guy. Like,
Sure. Yeah, what is that? I don't know what that's like. I guess that's just conversational reality, you know? I guess that's what it is. I don't know what the hell that is. But Hanks really has it in spades, you know? Yeah, he doesn't feel – he could be anything. He could be working class. He could be aristocratic, you know? That's also another quality that I admire, you know, people who can do different classes, different, you know, like – Don Cheadle can do that, you know. He can play a drug dealer, or he can play a maitre, you know, the host at the Hotel Rwanda, you know, that part, an amazing performance.
Or a
superhero. He does it all, you know. I love that stuff, you know. He's great, yeah. Davis.
You know, I don't know. You're a guy that I feel like I don't know that. You've managed to have a very nice career without really doing a lot of pressy stuff, you know, where it's like there's not a lot about you personally in the world, I feel like, which is a pretty tremendous feat.
I guess I feel like there's more than I would like to be out there, but I guess you're right. I mean, people know a little bit about I have a little sort of bohemian background in my childhood, but like theatrical stuff because my parents were actors, But yeah, I guess I've managed to be a little private, you know, hopefully.
Is it important for you? Like, is that a conscious thing? Do you say to your publicist, I don't want to do any of this kind of stuff, but I'll do this and this?
You know, I'm a whore. I say whatever say whatever the hell they ask me. But no, I try to, you know, sometimes people ask stupid shit, but I think, I don't know. I think you just do the best you can and try to be respectful of your private life. I don't know how you do that, but I think it is important, you know?
I think that people
– Daniel Day-Lewis, like, you know, like,
He seems like a fun hang. I don't know. You know, seems like a real fun hang. Just like right in the middle of filming.
You don't know because we've never really seen him on a chat show.
You could. That's true.
So maybe is. You know.
I guess you could probably like go get a drink with Mr. Lincoln, but I don't know if you could actually.
Exactly.
If you were like, "Hey Dan, I don't know who you're talking to at the moment." All right. Okay. I get it.
What happens there?
I don't know. What is this contraption that we're about to get into? This is an automobile. You have to explain everything. Like Lincoln was frozen in a fucking...
Shave the beard, dude.
What this beard? What are you talking about? It's highly irregular.
Yeah, dude. I mean, you know.
But, you know, you can't argue with the performances. Like, whatever he's doing works.
It certainly does.
I just wonder if it's worth it at the... Maybe he's a happy guy. I don't know anything about him. But I just wonder... Do you ever think to yourself, like, would I want to be that genius of a performer if it meant I had to sacrifice a part of my – a significant chunk of my happiness or my life?
You know, that's a good question. I've been miserable plenty of times, but it's kind of a nice misery. I think there's a good misery there because you're working hard. But, I don't want to – anything – I think the only thing I would say, though, is that nothing that is going to be permanent – you know, like I don't mind temporary pain.
Right.
I think that director of The Reverend said that. He said, you know, they were cold and some of the crew quit, but it was temporary.
Right. Know?
So that's okay. I think if it's permanent, I have a couple of permanent scars from working, but but yeah, that sucks if you keep the injuries, you know, so to speak. But I think if you're – he broke his ribs, Daniel Day-Lewis, I think doing – There Will Be Blood.
Probably on purpose.
Probably on purpose. Yeah. What's he trying to prove?
They weren't even shooting at the time. Know, he was just hitting himself in the sternum with a wrench.
F him and Tom Hanks.
Yeah. How fucking dare
they think they are?
I don't. I'm sick of it. But you know what?
Yeah,
maybe I'm the only.
I'm out of here.
Maybe we're the only ones brave enough to say it.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
DDL. Oh, yeah, I know you listen to podcasts, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
You fucking put the earbuds under your Lincoln hat. I know what you're really doing.
Yeah, come on.
Over there.
I know you watch The Simpsons. What's the matter?
I know Ralph Wiggum is your favorite character, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, come on.
Come on. You know why? Because Ralph Wiggum was great in the Washington play that they did in the episode of where Valentine's Day. This is getting very granular now, Sam Rockwell. I apologize.
You keep it Letterman cold in here, man. This is fucking...
Do you mean my personality?
This is, yeah. No.
Oh, okay. Not at all. Kind of Letterman cold.
No.
Did you ever do Letterman?
I did. That's why I was saying it's very cold in when you do Letterman.
This is not by design. It's not by design. The problem is this room is old and full of ghosts, I imagine. There's just a lot of death in here. There's a little bit of
maybe
space.
I'll steal that blanket, if you don't mind.
Please, put the blanket on.
A little stiff. I got a stiff hand. Oh, that feels pretty good, actually. This is really cozy.
I mean,
nice.
If you think I'm not going to get a picture of you.
Oh, yeah, you got to get a picture of this.
Just all bundled up.
Have you had Justin Long on this show?
Yeah, has Justin done the podcast? Justin did At Midnight. I don't think he's done the podcast
yet.
He's
a great mimic. You know that, right?
That I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, he's really good mimic.
All right.
He's great. You got to see his, God rest his soul, Philip Seymour Hoffman and Mark Wahlberg in Boogie Nights. He does both characters.
Both characters?
Yeah, it's all right, fabulous.
We gotta.
He does a great Matt Dillon, which he's done on talk shows. And he does the Ted Levine and Silence of the Lambs. He's great.
Ted Levine.
Yeah, he's really good. You gotta get Justin to do some impressions.
You know, so Ted Levine's an interesting case because here's a guy who's clearly a brilliant actor.
Yeah.
Does a role that is so iconic.
I know.
That even to this day, 25 years later, people are still like, should I put the lotion in the bag? You know, I know, I get it. I was a fucking Buffalo.
You know, we worked with him. Me and my friend David Rosenthal, we did a movie called Single Shot, and he was on the set, and we showed him the Lego Lotion in the Basket musical, and he loved it.
He did?
He loved it. We said we were scared to do it. We were like, I don't know, should we show Ted this thing? This is, look at this, we Googled the Lego musical, you know.
That is amazing.
He loved it. He was laughing his ass off.
I'm glad he has a good sense of humor. I mean, he's on a series for a long time too. He works all the time.
He works all the time. He's a monk and everything.
But is that? It is
he's
that.
Great.
It is
he's
that
great
one
actor.
Kind of a. It is that one thing of, you know,
Yeah.
What do you think is better to have a bunch of like medium roles or like one amazing, yeah. one incredible thing that people always talk about? I don't know. Do you
but you know, he has a great career. I mean, we got him on the set and we told him we're going to do this West Virginia accent. And he was like, oh, yeah, I can do that. And we're like, really? And he just did it. And then we had to flip a calf. And I couldn't flip the fucking calf. I was like, I think I flipped it once and that was it. But then he flipped it like a couple of times because he really lives on a farm and he knows how to do that, you know.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it was tough. Yeah, country's tough.
Do you ever want to? Are you an urban guy, or would you want to just live out in the country someday?
I'm definitely an urban guy. I just played a cowboy, and I had to learn how to lasso and stuff. But I've done a couple of westerns. You know, horses are unpredictable. You gotta be. They are. You know, they're not cars.
Yeah. I think we can establish horses are definitely not cars. Yeah. They were at some time.
They're not cars.
If you're Daniel Day-Lewis playing Lincoln, a horse is a car.
Exactly.
Now, horses are not cars. Horses are not cars anymore.
They are not cars. No. You know, it takes a little getting used to. But yeah, no, I'm definitely an urban creature. But I play a lot of country guys for some reason. I've played a lot of Southerners. I'm about to play a cop from Missouri, from Southern Missouri.
See, you have one of those great white guy faces.
I got a malleable white guy face.
That you could be, yeah. You could be Irish. Anything. You yeah. could be anything.
Yeah, I could be Irish German. I could be Jewish Italian. I could be Mediterranean.
You could be a gangster. You could work at a Chuck E. Cheese.
Like, exactly.
You could be anything.
Yes. Yes.
When do you think about? How kind of far in advance do you plan out what you're going to do? Or do you think, I want to do this kind of thing and then this kind of thing? Or I don't want to do too heavy emotional things back to back?
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't think there's any real game plan. I think you just kind of look. Somebody said, like, you look for the no-brainers, hopefully. And sometimes you just got to go to work. But I think you try to look for the no-brainers where you're like, oh, yeah, got to do that.
Right.
You know? Martin McDonagh, Chris Walken. Yeah.
I mean, I already have a shirt of the guy.
Yeah, I mean.
This is a sign.
Colin Farrell, Woody Harrelson. Yeah. Francis McDormand. Yeah, I'm in. You know, but like sometimes, you know, you don't get the no-brainers and you got to go to work. But hopefully you just have a string of no-brainers, you know.
Does the audition process ever get any easier? Do you not have to audition for stuff
anymore? I don't audition anymore. Occasionally, I will audition. I haven't auditioned in a few years, but I would audition if the part was, you know, if it was a great part. One of the biggest auditions I remember, last really big ones, was the Josh Brolin part in No Country for Old Men. Mm-hmm. That was a part I really wanted, and I had a call back. And that was one worth fighting for, you know. And a lot of people, some people had turned it down, and, you know. And Brolin was amazing in it. He was perfect. And it was great because it just came out of left field and gave him this huge career. You know, he was great.
Yeah.
And I actually really want to work with him. I love him.
What was that audition process?
Well, it was great. I mean, the Coens are really cool. They're really laid back, you know. And I had a great time, you know. That's as good as it's going to get as far as the audition process is somebody like the Coens or like Baz Luhrmann. I had a fun audition process, you know. It was like 2 hours doing Shakespeare with him. I mean, he was holding the camera. You know, I was up for Mercutio, and Harold Perrineau, who's a great actor, he did the part. And, you know, I had this great audition. I got to do Mercutio, you know, I got to do the death scene. And, you know, so that's as good as it's going to get, you know. As you know, it's like, because it can be horrible, some of these auditions, you know.
I know. I don't. Well, I don't.
They go through it all the time, and I work on auditions with them, and it's like, it's a fucking nightmare. Some of the stories, I remember pilot season back in the day. You know?
I know. Are we in pilot season now? It's March.
I think it's continuing. I think it's all year now.
It's all
right?
the time now because everyone's making shit all the time.
I mean, it's. I used to do pilot season with the Thomas Guide.
Yes, I remember the Thomas. Oh, I got to go to H1 by 2 o'clock. But then, okay, I got to turn to page 83. Oh, I got to get up to G9. I don't think I'm going to make it in time.
Yeah, dude.
Which way is San Vicente going? I'm very confused.
You can come up with good impressions with Luke getting lost in traffic.
The Thomas Guide.
With the Thomas Guide, man.
Everyone had a Thomas Guide. It's basically horrible. What if people don't.
You imagine that? Now with GPS? Can you imagine? I mean, it's just. I can't even imagine.
Oh, you just open the Thomas Guide and be like, what is this? What is
this?
It's
a nightmare.
There's just a bunch of squiggles. Yeah. I don't know what any of this shit is.
Yeah, it was like the phone book.
Was like a phone book, and it was a map of all of Los Angeles on grids.
Horrible.
And you just had to follow and flip, and it like turned to this page, and now go to this page. And it was like there was a time where driving in Los Angeles was like the movie National Treasure.
Yeah.
Where it was like, all right, I guess we got to – behind. There's a weird alleyway here, and then we got to find this. And the
I got lost all the time. No, you'd have to go early because you'd always get lost. And then by the time you got to the lot with the security – I mean, it was pre-9/11, but like
– you still couldn't park on the lot a lot of the time.
You still couldn't park. Street parking. And it was very intimidating. You'd get on the lot, and you'd have to like – from the traffic and getting lost, you'd have to like calm down before you auditioned.
Yeah.
Because the drive there got you so – that's not like what it was like in New York. I remember just going to like – getting on the subway, going to a coffee shop early and looking at my sides, you know? And like
– Not here.
Not here.
And not only that, but then if you're running late and then you're sweating and your heart's beating.
Yeah,
and
it's horrible.
And you're like, well, there's nine other guys here who look like me and what the fuck am I supposed to –
Yeah, with the uniform, with the jeans and the fucking the T-shirt and the leather jacket back when I was doing – they had the it was the actor uniform.
It was a generic sort of this could be anything.
This could be anything. I'm a blue collar guy, but I got a leather jacket and I got boots and my jeans are and I'm like 1950s, but I'm not.
I'm a business cowboy from another time.
Yeah,
like I could be anything. I always and I never did this, but I always loved seeing if there was a role that was a specific kind of character. Who the dude was going to be that would show up dressed as like, all right, you didn't need to come dressed as a rodeo clown or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
Did that ever work? Does that ever work? Like going full costuming?
You know, I think often that does not work. I think it backfires. I showed up for the ER audition in a lab coat and I had a ponytail and as you might have guessed, I was not
what
on ER.
I was very surprised.
And I had
it's their loss, Sam.
It's their. I also had get ready to scare some people. Not the needle part, but the plastic part of the hypodermic. I didn't actually have the needle, but I had the plastic part.
You took the plunger.
It's kind of like kind of half-assed.
What were you doing with the plunger?
It was part of the scene. I think it was the Noah Wiley part, and I auditioned for the pilot, and. They looked at me like I was crazy. The fucking hypoderm in the lab coat. I mean, and I think I had a ponytail because I had long hair at the time or something. It's like nuts. All these, horrible.
And do you kind of make jokes about that stuff, or are you like, and I'm going to be taking blood after the, you know, or are you?
I think as I got older, I probably did. But I think in the beginning, I was pretty serious. I remember I auditioned for Dead Poets Society, Unforgiven, and I think I had too many props for the Unforgiven. I had like a gun and a whiskey bottle. And they said, Clint doesn't like props. And I was like, okay, well, the guy has a gun and a whiskey bottle in the scene. What am I supposed to do, you know? So, you know, there was all these kind of – I would come in very prop heavy.
And that's amazing.
I probably still do.
I just like the idea of a young Sam Rockwell like running around the streets of New York with a carpet full prop bag of just full of stuff of whatever. Doctor, no problem. What am I, a subway conductor? Here's the hat. Like just like whatever it is. You're like,
yeah,
right
like
there.
A carpet bag. Yeah, and I used to take the newspaper print from the newspaper and give myself 5 o'clock shadow. That's how I do when I was playing like, you know, a gang member. Italian gang member.
That's an amazing piece
like
of
that.
Information.
It worked. By the way, it worked. Try
Excuse
it.
Me,
we don't, people don't have newspapers anymore.
Oh, I don't know if you're aware, but your 5 o'clock shadow says there are hostages in the Middle East. There's a Nancy comic on your cheek.
That's funny.
What was it that eventually kind of made you relax and stop doing that?
Never. I'll never relax. But I started, you know, eventually getting jobs and just saying goodbye to the restaurant jobs, you know, and then finally, I don't know. I don't think you ever relax, you know. You know, it's funny. The OJ movie is on. I see. Cuba Gooding sometimes, and I'd tell him how great he is. I love that. I love what they're doing on it, you know. And I remember I was delivering burritos when that, when he was fleeing in the Bronco, because I went up to some girl's house.
He's delivering and there were burritos. Two girls,
yeah, and they were like, yeah, no, but they said, I said, you're here. I'm here to give you your burrito, and they were like, come in, OJ's fleeing. You got to see it. It's on the TV. It's in the white Bronco, and I was like, your burrito's $12.95. So, like, people, when they say, where were you when OJ was fleeing? That's where I was.
Delivering
burritos. That's my last real
Who delivers
job.
Burritos?
Exactly.
Yeah, right?
You fall on the bicycle in the rain, and it's horrible. Cab doors open.
This is in New York. This is New York.
This is in New York, yeah.
You were riding a bike in New York.
Yeah.
In the early 90s.
I was. And when it rains, you know, that runs the roads get slick and cab doors open and you get hit.
All the poop from the alleys just starts swooping down into the streets. Just that top layer of human filth.
It's actually, yes, exactly. But it's actually wasn't a bad job. Probably be more dangerous now. I feel like traffic it's gotten nuts when you're to ride a bike in New York.
I think riding a bike in most cities is, especially here, I've had friends who would try it in L.A. for a while and then get run off the road by a bus. And yeah. Like, oh, yeah, you're not supposed – the roads are bad. Not good.
It's rough, man. It's rough. People don't have a lot of sympathy for people on bicycles. They should, though. It's environmentally, cool.
Well, but I have to text while I'm driving, Sam. There are very important things that I need to
– Exactly.
You know, there are memes that I have to share with people. I can't wait till I get somewhere to do that.
And look both ways.
No.
Who do you think you are?
Driving is really the pastime. It's not we're in mobile offices now.
Yeah, exactly.
Driving, if you hit a couple of people, they'll maybe be okay. Probably be okay.
No, it's – yeah.
I can't believe – I am so terrified – you know, especially like a friend of mine got a Tesla, and I've been in Teslas before, but the screen is just like it's so interactive. How is that safe?
The Tesla. What do you mean? Oh, the screen.
The panel. Oh. The entire console.
It's like a spaceship. Yeah,
it's like a spaceship, and so it's basically like a large tablet in the middle between the seats. And it just, it's like, you can get news, and it's a map, and it's just like everything.
Yeah, too much, man.
There's just too much.
Too much.
Let's just either perfect driverless cars or have something
totally
in a car that just kind of shuts down the electronics so we're not tempted.
And pedestrians are like really like, second-class citizens in L.A. I mean, you really hate pedestrians. If you're walking around, you're like a leper if you're walking.
You're not
in
supposed
LA.
To walk anywhere in Los Angeles. You're not. It's a weird thing to do.
Walking. What do you know?
What's that person's fucking deal? Why can't he just get in a car and create more traffic?
Yeah.
It's been worse here lately for some reason. There's construction everywhere. It's really rough getting around the city.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not late for auditions all the time. I just go to like two or three places. And that's all I have to do.
That's all you need to do. Yeah. You got to avoid all the rush hour times. It's hard.
Do you live out here? Did we discuss this? Do you live out here?
I live out here part time with my girlfriend Leslie Bibb. And,
I've met her before. She's really funny.
She's really funny.
I met her at the Chelsea Lately one time.
Oh, you did?
We were both doing the show.
Chelsea. She's really funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Leslie's super super funny.
Yeah. Yeah. She's great. She's working. She's doing great. And gonna do something with our old buddy Rob Corddry.
Nice.
And we live here part time, and then we a place in New York, and we have a dog.
Do you take the dog back and forth?
You take the dog, but it's fancy.
That's really nice.
It's fancy. You got like a rehab place that's very fancy. It's like, like Kobe should go there and do rehab. It's very, these dogs getting acupuncture. It's very, it's a lot. It's very Hollywood.
Dogs have fewer chakras than humans, so you have to align them. I don't know if
exactly.
That's true or not.
I don't know if it's true.
I know that dogs evolve to appreciate foot massage. They love a good...
Yeah.
There's some dogs where you're just looking and you're like, you would not survive a minute in the wild.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
I know.
Over for you.
I know.
You better hope you never get out of here because this is it.
I know. Oh, dogs. You love dogs, though. Dogs are great.
We had dogs my whole life. My mom was the type of lady who would not be afraid to throw a jacket on a dog, which feels weird.
A human jacket?
Jacket on a dog.
That's awesome.
A human jacket modded to fit a dog.
Once you love a dog, there's really no limit to what you let him in the bed, and then you're like, what the hell is this dog doing in my bed?
You know, I get that. I don't understand. Animals are made with fur. Like, they don't need a fucking bomber jacket.
No, they don't need a bomber jacket.
They don't need.
They don't.
They don't need.
They don't need a bomber jacket.
Little booties.
Yeah.
It's just not appropriate.
A Beyonce jacket. Yeah. A Kardashian winter jacket. We Sadie is her name, German Shepherd. She's the Kardashian of German Shepherds.
She is. She's very, very spoiled.
Oh, you got a dog here.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's Katie's dog, our producer.
That's Scout. Awesome.
Scout does that, basically.
That's Scout. Hey, Scout, relax.
Yeah, seriously.
Calm down.
Take it down a notch, Scout.
Yeah.
Jesus, the dog is not moved a hair.
It's fucking out, man. In a coma, this dog.
This is the chillest dog in the world. I honestly
could care less what we're doing here. It's just out.
I would several times a day I would hold a mirror under that dog's nose and be like, I need to make sure that everything's okay.
Yeah, totally. Our dog's been doing these old like grandma snoring now. It's like
all mouth snoring.
We're like, what's going on, Sadie? It's just like just getting older and just doing, you know,
deviated septum.
Maybe, you know,
a lot of coke. Dog doing a lot of coke.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. We got her an 8-ball. Said, come on, hurry up.
You got one of those Kong toys and just put coke in it. It was like, oh, the dog loves to sniff out the Kong
come on,
toy.
Let's step it up. Let's go. I got shit to do. Let's walk around the block. Poopy poopy.
Is the dog basically your kid?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. But it's a beautiful black and white German Shepherd. Looks like a husky. It's a beautiful dog.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I think
very,
I
very well trained.
I read something where you're like, "Yeah, I don't think the kid thing is for me." And I was always on that train, but then I'm getting married and my fiance is like, I want to have kids. And I'm like, okay. And I'm weirdly okay with it now.
And now you're cool with it.
No, but we haven't yet because we're not married yet. Of course, we're going to express our physical love on our wedding night before the eyes of the Lord. So I just want to make sure everyone knows that that's what we're.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. Well, like, good for you. I mean, you know, if it's for you and you want to, you know, do it, man. I respect parents.
I do too. Right? But I always do think they seem a little loopy because you always get the same.
Well, they're tired. They're exhausted.
They have not slept in years.
They're like always sick.
Always, because the kid's a petri dish of everything because they have no resistance. Yeah, it's. But they
That's
all
what you have to look forward to.
Well, they all say the same. They all say the same thing where they're like, I mean, I never thought I wanted kids, and then this is like the greatest thing in the world. Can you imagine loving something more than anything? And then I'm like, free time. I like sleep. But but I don't know. It's, you know. But I feel okay with it. I guess I don't know. Whatever our dynamic, it didn't. The warning signals didn't go up when she said it. I was like, yeah, okay.
That's phenomenal.
It is phenomenal.
That's phenomenal.
But I really never thought I was going to do it.
Have fun.
That sounded kind of sarcastic, Sam.
Good for you.
Well, that doesn't sound sincere either.
Good for you.
And what's amazing is that tone and seeing the face on your Christopher Walken t-shirt, which is sort of like...
Good for you. Have fun with those kids. You're going to be great. You're going to be great, Dad.
I don't know if it's you or the shirt anymore, Sam. Who am I getting? Oh, I don't know what else to mention. It's funny when you have someone on a podcast and they've done so many things as you've done. People always go like, "How come you didn't talk about X?" And I'm like, "I don't. What was I supposed to say?" But Moon is a fucking phenomenal movie,
dude. Thank you,
Duncan
man.
Jones is the sweetest, most amazing.
He's got Warcraft coming
Warcraft's
out.
Coming
it's
out.
Gonna be awesome.
He's incredible.
He's the best.
What was some of the process for that movie? Which was so I loved it because I loved the. What is the Carradine movie?
Yeah. Carradine.
Was it Carradine?
Bruce Dern.
Bruce Dern. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Not Soylent Green. We.
He's got the last forest on the craft.
Yeah, of course. No, we modeled it essentially after that film, and I'm spacing on the.
Spacing.
He's got the robots, and he's got the green. You know, he's what the hell? Running.
Silent runnings.
Silent runnings.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Oh,
we based it on. That's the basic.
I feel like I just had a brain baby.
No, dude. Welcome to my life. No, that's essentially the what we stole the concept from, but then we also modeled a lot of it. You know, we took some stuff from Alien and Outland and then, you know, this weird clone thing. So we did that, and we stole a lot from. We took some. I think our learning curve. We watched a lot of the DVD extras from Dead Ringers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Jeremy Irons plays the twins, and he did it. That's the best I've seen that trick done, I think, in as far as a lead in a feature film. It was done in an adaptation, but that was here and there. And although recently Tom Hardy did it really well in Legends. He's really good in that Legend. He plays the gangster Craze.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a tough trick. And, you know, I think I watched Midnight Cowboy. My acting coach, Terry Knickerbocker, told me to watch Midnight Cowboy. My friend Yul Vasquez and I, we would switch parts, and Duncan would write down the ad-libs, and we'd fuck around, and he'd read Clone 1, and then I'd read Clone 2, and then we'd switch clones and do it again. It was a real a mind F. Can I? What is the policy on that here?
Oh, yeah, you can swear a lot.
Okay. Yeah. It was a mind fuck. It was very strange to do. You'd have to rehearse twice.
But that's one of those movies where I feel like you really have to trust the director, because it's such a specific thing that, and as an actor, you probably don't get a sense of how it's being shot or what it's going to look like. So
we were very nervous until we did the first motion control shot, which is the camera that's used for that effect to get two of the same people in the shot. And we were very nervous. It was a low budget.
So yeah.
We were, until we got the first effect, we were very nervous about it, you know.
How about what was your experience on Hitchhiker's Guide?
Oh, man, that was great, man. That was awesome. Martin Friedman, Zoe, Mos Def. Yeah, that was a great experience. Those directors, I mean, I think they did a great job. I love doing that movie. I was hoping it would become a franchise, you know. But then I was hoping Galaxy Quest would become a franchise, like Ghostbusters or something.
It almost did, Tim Allen.
Yeah, Tim. No, but I loved Hitchhikers. I really thought that I'd get to play that character again. It just didn't do the business I think it needed to.
Well, know. That book particularly is tricky because people are so... It's so much a part of their soul. Like, it's, you know, like that.
Yeah, yeah. We were very faithful. We had British directors, but I don't know if America was that interested in it. I think it did pretty well overseas.
Well, America's dumb. so let's just get that out. America's dumb, and they're wrong. Yeah,
exactly.
I loved it, and I thought
hey,
you were
right
great
on.
People
Thanks,
talk.
Man.
I thought you were fucking great.
Thank you. We were very faithful. You know, the sequel, Zaphod's all over the sequel, so I don't know. What are you going
to
do?
I don't know. I just want Tim Allen to agree to do it.
Yeah.
Hey, Tim. Just do Galaxy Quest.
Have you had Tim Allen? Tim Allen on the show? What is that? What is that?
It's Tim.
Is that how he talks?
That was old stand-up thing. His whole entire show and life and set was built around, hey, you know, guys go into the hardware store and you're like, wah, 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 wah. You know, it was like he's being a monkey because guys were dumb monkeys. So what?
He's so cool. Yeah.
He is cool. He'd be cooler if he agreed to do Galaxy Twist 2. This is news breaking that you're telling me this. And I'm also a piece of my heart is shattered off like the Dark Crystal. Knowing that was a thing that almost could have happened.
We had some fun. Tim Allen, we had some fun with Tim Allen. He was really funny. He was very fun to be on set with. He's a very funny guy.
I mean, that whole, like, everyone in that movie. Well, so Mr. Right comes out April 8th.
Yes, yes, that's right. That's why I'm here.
April 8th and it.
Yes, Anna Kendrick, and we have all these amazing people in it. It's I'm excited about it. You know, I get to. You know, it's like Gross Point Blank.
Yes,
that's what we're sort of aiming for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I get to kick some ass and stuff, and it's fun.
You're an assassin.
I'm an assassin, and it was really fun doing the fight stuff. And I think Anna had a great time with the fight stuff. It was fun. Yeah.
And you got Do you like playing assassins? Because you get to play. You get to do Confessions of a Dangerous Mind too.
I like guns, and I like physical. I'm sort of a would-be dancer. So I like physicality in expressing yourself. And I think fight scenes are great, really fun to choreograph. We had a great fight scene in Moon, actually, where the two clones fought each other. So I got to do both sides. I got to kick my own ass, you know. And it's really fun. I think it's really fun to do fight stuff, you know. I got a kick out of it.
what's left? Like, what do you still want to? What do you still want to do? Like, what if you had the choice?
Oh God, so many. I mean, you know, I just did Sam Shepard play with great actress Nina Arianda on Broadway, and Fool for Love, and we had a great time. So it'd be nice to be. I mean, I've never played Hamlet. I'm probably getting too long in the tooth for Hamlet, but it'd be fun to do. I don't know. Iceman's coming through.
I kind of feel like you could just do it. If
maybe.
You just, I think you're really
I'm
at the point.
A little, you know, chasing my mom around.
Nah, you know, you still look 30. Like, you'd be fine. You know, I think if you said, I want to play this character,
yeah.
Someone would produce that. Someone would.
Well,
do
you got to have. Well, actually, Alan Rickman actually once told me, he says, you need somebody who has a vision. You can't just, you know, do it as a vanity piece. You need a director that has a vision of how to do it.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the thing. Although, yeah, I could just do it, you know, in the street. Say
you could
fuck
just
it.
Do it in the street.
You know
fuck
what I mean?
It. People, you know, I think people
just
would actually
walking down the street. Seems, madam, nay, it is. I know not seems. They'd be like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Shh, let him go. He's wearing a blanket. I mean, it is.
Wouldn't it be great if you were just doing that, just eating a Chibo, and all of a sudden you just break into soliloquy?
I guarantee you.
Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave, you know, eating egg whites.
You know what would happen? No one else would look up. I think people are so, at particular parts in the city, people are so conditioned or like to not.
That'd be a great character.
That would be amazing.
That'd be a great character.
The public Hamlet guy,
yeah,
who just does,
yeah,
Hamlet
totally,
in public.
Totally, totally.
If anyone could get away with it, I think you absolutely could get away
but
with
do
it.
Do it as Elvis. Do it as Elvis. And maybe Vince Vaughn and Colin Farrell are also like double Elvises. You have like triple Elvises doing Shakespeare.
I don't think most people could get away with it. I think you could get away with it. I think if you did it, people are like, that's fucking cool that he did. Sam Rockwell, he's just, if you go to Chibo like on Fridays, he's just doing Hamlet in the corner and eating pasta. Like,
yeah, he's an honorary man. Come on.
As Elvis.
As Elvis.
It's the weirdest mashup.
You got to see Chris Walken do Elvis. He does a fun Elvis.
I would love to see that happen.
We did that on the – we did a press junket. You can Google it with the great Josh on MTV. And we got Chris to do a little Elvis. And it was pretty fun.
Is it – does it sound like Elvis, or does it sound like someone doing a Christopher Walken impersonation doing an Elvis impersonation?
A little bit of all that, yeah. But it was fun, and we got silly. You know, when you do those press junkets, you know, it gets very silly, as you know.
Well, of course. Your brain goes numb.
Your brain goes numb. You're like scrambled eggs up there, and you're like, it's 8 hours of,
yeah,
you know, the same. Not like this. This is an actual conversation, but when you do those little TV things, you know, it's like the same thing over and over again. Your brain turns into scrambled eggs.
Sam, if you were an assassin, who would be the first person you would kill? Sam.
That's actually hauntingly accurate.
Would you ever be an assassin, Sam? And then you'll talk to him for like 5 or 7 minutes, and all they'll ever use is like, Sam Rockwell said being in this movie was great. Like, there's not even a...
That's true. It's really, you can get very silly, very silly. You know, hopefully you have silly actors around you, you know, that are, you're doing the junket with, like Oliver Platt, I think, that gets pretty silly.
Yeah.
Pretty silly.
You know,
Maya Rudolph.
Oh, she's amazing.
Yeah.
She's really amazing.
Yeah.
I think the other people who've been on, who are in the Mr. Right with you have also been on the podcast before, and they were, Anna was great.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. She's awesome. She's awesome. And RZA. I'm leaving Ants and Mounts in it. There's a bunch of great people in it. Yeah.
Is there something coming up that you're particularly excited about, or do you like to take time off, or are you bad with time off?
I you know, not too much time off, a little time. I'm going to go play this cop in a Martin McDonagh movie with Woody Harrelson and Frances McDormand.
Jeez.
And it's a fun character, yeah. So,
do you feel like you've made it? Do you feel like... I did it. I did the thing I wanted to do.
I feel good. But, you know, you always want to do something else. You know, you always want to keep pushing it, you know. But, you know, it's a great job. I mean, I'm very lucky. I'm obviously, you know.
Okay. I feel like would you say you were going to do it for Amazon, Galaxy Quest, for
yeah.
Amazon?
Yeah.
I feel like there's a Fleegman spinoff.
Maybe a Fleegman spinoff.
Where does it
go, though?
Well, I don't know.
What happens to Fleegman?
Fleegman probably cons his way, because he's able to Well, he'd fuck it up eventually.
Well, the joke, yeah.
I feel like he, coming off of, coming off of what they did,
yeah,
he'd be able to. I feel like he'd be able to con his way into like ruling a planet or being a high ranking official somewhere. And
you know,
then,
you're right. I think you're right, actually. And the pilot seemed the pilot was very good, and it seemed to be going in that direction, I think.
And but then something would happen, and he'd do something to kind of fuck it up, and then he'd have to con his way out of it.
Totally. Totally. It should be like, what's that movie with Sean Connery and Michael Caine and Christopher Plummer, A Man Who Would Be King? Or what? No, is that it?
Mermaids? No, okay, that wasn't it.
Yeah, it was Porky's.
Porky, no. No, I'm sorry, Porky's 2 the next day.
That's right. Sorry, Porky's 2 the next day.
Christopher Plummer. When do you suppose we're going to get back to Porky's? When are we going to get back to Porky's?
What's the Miss Moneymaker? Is that the James Bond?
Moneypenny.
You had Daniel Craig on the show.
He's a lovely movie
star as well.
Man, he was so fucking cool.
What a cool guy, right?
You know, I'm always so pleasantly surprised. We've had almost no bad experiences in this.
Oh,
out of
almost.
800, we've had a couple. That were not terrible, but just a little rough because sometimes, you know, some people. They can be a little defensive, and it was a case where I couldn't mash the fandom out of the way.
Yeah.
Great learning experience, though.
Yeah.
But Daniel Craig was one of those guys who were like, oh, my God, you're fucking so cool.
He's awesome. He's a cool guy. He's a really cool guy. Yeah.
Who's left? Is there a bucket list of got to work with this guy, got to work with this lady, need to work with this person, or is it just
God.
An infinite?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many people. But, yeah, I've been really lucky, but I – but there's so many people – to work with and great directors, you know, P.T. Anderson, Fincher, Coen Brothers. I mean, there's a lot of people. I mean, it just the list goes on and on, you know. Wes Anderson.
What was your Dead Poets Society audition? Who were you auditioning for?
Was it Ethan Hawke? Oh, you know, Peter Weir, great director. I don't know if it was a callback or it was just I went in for the funny kid. The funny guy who says God's on the phone.
Oh, right.
I think I went in for that part.
Right.
That was the only part I was sort of right
for,
You
also shouldn't
maybe.
Have dressed up like a dead poet. Like, that was the other...
Yes, I thought this was Edgar Allan Poe
it
meets
says dead,
dead
poets.
Poet. Yeah. What's the deal?
I don't know. I brought in these torn up clothes.
Yeah, I have snuff and a pipe. you know. No, it was... You don't like my handlebar mustache? No, it was like, you know, whatever. Those auditions are always so weird. But I think it was okay. I remember going in for Scent of a Woman and just basically looking at the casting director. I forgot, but she was very, very cool. Is it Francine Maisler? Who was it? It was some – but she – I basically looked at her going in for the Chris O'Donnell part. Mm. I would have been more right for the Phil Hoffman part, but – I that's the first time I saw Phil, and he blew me away. But I was like going in for the Chris O'Donnell part, and I looked at the casting, and she looked at me, and I was like, "Yeah, this is I gotta go." Yeah, this is not. She was like, "Yeah, no." I was like, "Okay, cool, totally agree with you. I'm out.
I'll see you later."
Yeah,
thanks.
You know, like we were both in agreement. Like I am not right for this. You know.
Yeah, I always tried to diffuse the room with a little bit of. Little bit of auditioning humor, which never really
Give
worked.
Us an example.
All right, here's an example, Sam. Chris, before we start, do you have any questions? Yes. What font is this? Like, you know, just trying to have fun with it. Just trying to have fun. Or I would go, can I just have this? Do I have to audition? And they'd be like, yeah. And it never ends.
Isn't that true about Danny DeVito for Taxi that he just kind of said, fuck you, because you just give me this, and he ripped the script. And
You hear legendary stories like that, but I don't have any real world experience of that ever working.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I were that guy, they'd be like, well, you're never working again. You're a piece of shit. I mean, I guess DeVito could pull it off, but I was not one. I would never pull that off.
Yeah. I think he was in character. Yeah. Maybe that's why they.
What was the reading that you did with Pacino?
Oh, we did a reading of this long. We did an amazing reading of a great play Lyle Kessler wrote called Orphans, which they did on Broadway. With Alec Baldwin and Ben Foster recently, but about a year ago. But me and Chris Messina, great actor, we did a reading in Pacino's penthouse with him of Orphans, and that was an amazing experience. But previous to that, trying to get that gig just to kind of have him consider orphans, I did a reading where I had like five lines of Napoleon, which was like 5 hour long screenplay.
Oh my God. And
everybody was there. F. Murray Abraham, all these people. it was Eric Stoltz was there, but it was just, it was long, you know, we were waiting to like get through it, you know, but it was a lot of cool people, you know.
Pacino seems like a guy who doesn't get, I happened to be at a thing where he was getting an AFI award and
yeah,
we were right. It was 12 years ago. I was writing jokes for the Jeremy Piven who was hosting it.
Yeah.
And Pacino was like, he just seems so dumbfounded by the whole thing. Like, I don't understand. I just take jobs and I don't know what this is. Like, he seemed so baffled by the whole Pacino experience.
Yes, yes. He's like a, you know, corporation, right? I mean, he's like, Pacino's like, it's almost like Elvis for actors. It's like, I remember he showed us a thing of Scarface. There was this tribute, all these, you know, rap gangsters love Scarface. And there mm-hmm. was this like documentary about it or something on the DVD. But he was very nice. And I think Chris Messina then later played his son in a David Gordon Green movie.
I guess ultimately you always just feel like yourself and people put things on you.
Yeah. Right. I guess. Yeah. I think that's what it is. I think it's just like, yeah, he's just this dude and they have kind of put this thing on Pacino, especially, you know,
but people must freak out over you sometimes, like, especially if you go to Comic-Cons or you're out in public and people, oh my God, I got blah, blah, blah. Like, how do you deal
you know,
with
it? Film people, know who I am. I think film people, otherwise, you know, sometimes, you know, you get that thing like, hey, come here. You know, I know Justin Long's got these guys, they've seen these frat guys. They're like, come here. I want to talk to you. It's like, come there, you know? And they're like, tell me, what were you in?
Yeah.
You know, that thing. But
my girlfriend says you're on something, but I don't watch TV. What is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Should I take a picture with you? Well, not if you don't know.
Some movies. Yeah, movies
what's your IMDb page?
Yeah.
Give me your IMDb page. What's your Wikipedia?
What was you in?
Well,
you know.
No. And you start listening to stuff.
Match Stick Man.
No. Come on, man. You're fucking with me. Do it.
Yeah, you know. But then people, I think, who are very much in the know about cinema, they know because I've done weird movies and they know. But and that's nice. That's fun. You know, when people who actually bring up movies and they actually know your name and
they
know the movie.
Do you have a particular favorite? Is there one that you felt super connected to?
Well, Moon is and Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, obviously. I love some movies that not a lot of people saw, like Joshua Snow Angels, I'm really fond of. Or there's a movie that called The Winning Season that not a lot of people saw that I worked very hard on. Rooney Mara's in it and Emma Roberts. And, you know, I played a basketball coach and I did a lot of research, you know, but nobody sees the movie, you know. It's funny.
Are you okay with that? Or do you feel like, I did what I was supposed to?
No, I'm not okay with it. I want people to see it. Fuck that, man. But I, you know, it happens. You kind of have to just go with it and it's part of the process. And sometimes it makes you a better actor and it pays off later. And, you know, I have that knowledge about the little knowledge I have about basketball from that movie. And maybe that'll pay off later if I play Bobby Knight. I don't know.
I thought you were about to say if I play professional basketball. Take a hard
See, that
right
would
turn.
Be good. That's why you get paid the big bucks.
And starting point guard for the Washington Generals, Sam Rockwell. What?
Oh,
is he
God.
Shooting a movie?
I am the worst basketball player of
too.
All. That's one thing I discovered. Although the ball handling, no pun intended.
What?
I got pretty good at that, actually. But, yeah, I think I would shoot, and I had a great guy, Sean Green, who ex-NBA player. I think he played for the Pacers, and I would shoot, and he'd just go like this.
His face in his hands.
Yeah.
I'm doing good. That's good, right?
That's good, right?
Huh? Am I doing it? Am I doing it? Well, it's been great to have
hey,
you.
Hey, man.
We've dominated a lot of your time, and you're such a – you're exactly the Sam Rockwell I was hoping for.
Hey, man.
All right. Enjoy a burrito as delivered by former burrito delivery person Sam Rockwell.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito. In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven, a geoengineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Pura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she is willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Rhea Seehorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.